Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger, with you live on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Very excited to be here with you this morning on this Wednesday, March 13th. It is a glorious day in Tucson, one of those Chamber of Commerce weather sort of days. And today we are going to be talking about all things green, right? As we are in the middle of March, I missed you guys last week. I was out volunteering all week long at the Colo Guard Classic here in Tucson. And speaking of green, the greens at La Paloma, the Western La Paloma Resort and Golf Course, were looking fantastic for the Senior Tour event, the Champions Tour, that was here in Tucson. Hopefully you guys got a chance to go out there and experience that. I know I did. We spent all week out there scrimming fences, taking care of public restrooms, setting up for the concert, and it was really a great week. We had over 9,000 tickets sold for that Midland and Roger Klein and the Peacemakers concert out at the Rito Downs, which is a fantastic event. We had thousands and thousands show up for the golf tournament itself, and I had one of the best rounds of golf I've ever had in my entire life. And no, this wasn't me playing golf. Any of you listeners out there that have had the displeasure of playing golf with me would know that that would not be because of my skills around the green, but instead, I got to caddy this week at the Special Olympics for a Special Olympian on the course at La Paloma. And it was an absolutely amazing and rewarding experience. And so I know that walking up and down those greens, like on that course, well, it was set up for the PGA, but to get to play with a Special Olympian was really an amazing experience for myself. And I hope that you listeners can come out and participate sometime next year. There's another 4 years on this deal with the Westin La Paloma. We'd love to have you guys out there. It was a fantastic event for Tucson, Arizona. Now, speaking of other things green, we are leading into the week of St. Patrick's Day, right? That will be the 17th of March, as most of you know, an Irish holiday. Something that in my hometown of Detroit, Michigan, we celebrated quite heavily in the Irish pubs and the old Tipperary or the old Shillelagh, where we were allowed to drink as perhaps, you know, high school age students or something. The world has changed a bit now when it comes to that sort of thing, but we're really excited for St. Patrick's Day, a really big restaurant and bar day in southern Arizona. We happen to have an amazing event coming up in St. Philip's Plaza, and my restaurant's over there. I don't normally plug any of that on the show, but it happens to be Selection Sunday, which is where the University of Arizona will hopefully be selected as the number one seed out of the West. And we've got Coach Tommy Lloyd and all 15 Arizona Wildcat basketball players showing up to St. Philip's Plaza live on CBS Sports, where the camera feed will be there to broadcast live and show the team celebrating when they're selected. We did it last year, and it was a really, really neat experience when they panned into the team being selected as the number two seed at that time, and they showed all the fans cheering in St. Philip's Plaza. The host of CBS Sports actually said, "Wow, there's a party going on there in Tucson," and that was pretty neat to see. And hopefully these sort of things will help promote Tucson, not just as a town, but for the players as well too, young high school phenoms looking at that TV broadcast saying, that's a place that values their university. That's a place that values their players. That's where I'd like to go play basketball. So please do come join us as well on St. Patrick's Day, 3 p.m. live on CBS Sports St. Philip's Plaza, which will be a great event as well too. But the final green thing that we want to talk about today happens to be legalized cannabis products, which have been legal since November of 2020, right? And I think we were the first of the states to both legalize and quickly get these to the market. And I happen to have a guest host today with me who's going to come and talk about all of those challenges that he's had in this particular business. It happens to be an Eller graduate, just like myself. He's an MIS graduate, if I recall correctly. I've got Mo Asnani here from both the Downtown and D2 dispensaries. Good morning, Mo.
Grant, thank you for having me.
No, very excited to have you here today, my friend.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's something where we've been doing this for several years, and, you know, we're now getting more in the mainstream, and it's shows like this where we can come and talk about what we do. So thank you again.
No, it's a really important business here in Tucson, Arizona, quite frankly. The idea that this is now a taxable product that we can sell, we can openly talk about, that you can advertise. I see you're actually doing advertisements on Twitter now as well.
We are. Yeah, we're totally we're on social media that allows us to be on social media. Meta and, you know, some of the pubcos are still not allowing us to be on there, but X is, as you know, privately owned. So they do allow us to be on there.
Well, and jump in Tucson, Mo. Like, one of the things that we like to celebrate are success stories, right? Local business people that are doing it right. People that have come up, like, from, in my case, nothing. I started as a dishwasher, right? And have worked my way up to not just being your illustrious radio host this morning, but happen to own a number of restaurant establishments here. Give me a couple minutes about your story, about how you came up and came to the United States.
So I moved to the U.S. in 95. The first place I saw when I landed in Tucson or in the U.S. was Vegas. So I literally get in here and I'm like, there's Excalibur and everything. It's the mid-90s. And, you know, we got to live in rural America before I got to come to Tucson. So I got to experience small town America quite a bit. But then when, you know, I worked a regular job, everything, graduated Eller, I got to a point where I saw that cannabis was going to become a bigger thing. And that's where medical started to happen in Arizona. And from there on, I just kind of said, hey, you know, I want to be a part of this business, partnered up with my current business partner, Chip. And from then on, we've kind of started with 303 employees. And today we have probably over 190, give or take. So, you know, we've been growing at a rapid pace.
That's an amazing number of employees. We're similar too on my restaurant side. We're about 225 team members as well too. And these are the size of businesses that don't often get celebrated in Tucson, right? We'll talk about Caterpillar and the 600 jobs that they brought for 6 or 7 years. We've been talking about that deal, but here's a guy right across the table with me with over 200 jobs, and you're not necessarily even a household name yet in Tucson, and you should be. And so after the break, when we come back, we're going to explore a little deeper your roots, no pun intended, in the cannabis industry. We're going to talk about what's going on in that retail space in Tucson. I'm going to ask Mo some hard-hitting questions about why are there so many smoke shops here in Tucson? What's the relationship between those and, of course, the now legalized cannabis that we have here? And we're going to discuss all the trials and tribulations that you have doing business here in the 520. Again, you are listening to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, your 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. You are listening to Jump in Tucson with your host, Grant Kruger. We are live this morning with Mo Asnani, co-founder and partner of the Downtown Dispensary and D2 Dispensaries here in Tucson. Now, when I talk about local business, we often think of the risk and reward, right? Of putting it all on the line out there. And I think of restaurateurs who have mortgaged their house or all of their possessions, you know, out there in this like boom or bust cycle to make something work. And we've talked about before with Dan Bogart from the ARA, where we had an 80% failure of those businesses inside of the first 5 years. But thinking about the risk reward of the cannabis industry, starting with medical marijuana, starting with something that was actually illegal on a federal level, Mo, can you tell me about some of those risks that you took early on to invest in this business?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you talk about it being was federally illegal, it is currently still federally complicated is the best way I'll put it. But, you know, when you go back to 2010, that's when the voters passed the Arizona Medical Marijuana Act, and the governor at the time held it up. So you had folks out there getting leases and, you know, getting build outs started. And then the governor at the time, Jan Brewer, held it up and said, hey, you know, we're not sure if this is federally legal. So a lot of people, you know, ran out of money and started to not even go anywhere with it. And then finally, by 2012, once we had some more federal clarity on what was happening, that's when the first stores started to open. So, you know, for us, when we started with those three employees, the level of risk was tremendous. We didn't know what kind of federal enforcement we'd be seeing. And at the end of the day, you know, you only had 38,000 patients statewide. It's not like you could come in and buy if you're 21 and over. So you had a very limited pool of customers in the whole, you know, Pima County. I think there were maybe, I don't know, a few thousand at best. So, and being in that environment and, you know, feeling that fear and at the same time, you know, building from it, I think is something that all of us in the cannabis industry went through. I don't just want to say it was me who did it, but all of us in Arizona and, you know, throughout the country who all got into this industry early on, the level of risk was significant. We didn't know talking, you know, asset forfeiture, you know, some of the statutes out there. And I think now it has normalized to a place where you don't have that fear factor. But in the early days, you definitely were thinking about that, and you have to, that was a sacrifice.
Without a doubt. I heard horror stories that even banking wasn't allowed in any capacity, that this was sort of like an all cash world, that you couldn't take credit or debit cards and everything had to be in cash. Is that true?
Yeah. So there was at least a 5-year period we were without legitimate banking, you know, and that was, again, very hard when you're trying to grow a business to not have banking. It's foundational. So going through that and then finally seeing, you know, some banks in Arizona start to service our industry. And just to give you an example, like Washington State, they legalized medical and recreational before we did. And they had 3 or 4 banks statewide who would take cannabis accounts. And for us, we didn't have that till maybe 4 years after they did. So you had these different states all starting off with these programs and then not having the most basic infrastructure until later on.
So what did you do? Did you just have to have like a big giant safe, some security guards there with that one? I mean, that sounds kind of sketchy, my friend.
A lot of, you know, we're in an old building with a lot of infrastructure to stop you from getting to a safe. And that's really what we could do there. So, yeah, being in a historic building actually helps there.
So let's talk about that historic building and being downtown a little bit as well, too. Tell the listeners your location for downtown dispensary.
So the downtown dispensary, which is just, I want the listeners to know, this will be rebranded as a D2 within the coming months. But what we're doing there is we're in a 115-year-old building that at some point used to be an embalming facility. Then it used to be a church. It was a bread company. The Stone Cipher building, which is what it is, has a tremendous amount of history, you know, Tucson history in it. And I just think it's super cool that we could go into a building, you know, that's on or close to being, I think, on the Federal Register of Historic Places. I think it's on there. And we're perhaps the dispensary, one of the oldest buildings in the country.
Wild. That's really neat. What challenges are you having in your industry downtown? I know that a number of restaurateurs have reported not really having the bounce back post-COVID that so many other locations did, with the reduction in office workers, right, remote working, and just in general, like a retail sales drop downtown. Have you experienced that in your industry, or is it something entirely different?
No, I think the downtown area has been negatively affected now for a few years. And I think it's a combination of factors. One is the traffic and the construction combination, right? You have a very large amount of traffic because you're near the UFA. And at the same time, the construction took forever. So just imagine, you know, people trying to turn into your entrance for 3 years, having cones and trafficades in front of it. That was our reality for a long time. And then at the same time, when COVID happened, you know, the crime level and everything in downtown did go up, and not coming back to the office and all of that for however long it's been has hurt that local economy there.
Have you experienced crime yourself down there? Like, have there been break-ins to the dispensary? Is it like a Fort Knox that basically is not going to be subject to something like that?
You know, we have had incidents happen while we were open, luckily. I think when we were closed, anything that happens has been dealt with relatively quickly. But in terms of when we're open, yeah, we've had some incidents where, you know, the police were involved. And unfortunately, I think the behavior patterns of some folks who go into dispensaries, they thought they could act a certain way, and it's like, no, this is still like any other business. You still have to have a certain, you know, civility when you do that. And now I think we're there, but we have experienced that downtown, I would say, more than our other location.
So the first 7 years you were operating as a medicinal marijuana facility, like essentially, yes, distributing only to patients that had a specific card, right, that had to get this from a doctor in some capacity. And this went recreational in November of 2020. You had a pretty big hand in helping craft those state laws. Can you talk about that?
I think that, you know, quite a few of us, and I'd say probably about, you know, a couple dozen people, were very involved in that legislation, because 2020 was a success year. 2016 was the failure year. So we had a proposition called Prop 205 in 2016 that would have legalized marijuana, and that failed. You know, and I think it took us a couple of years to kind of recoup from that. It was very painful. A lot of investment went into that initiative, and, you know, it was all for naught. But we learned from it, and then in 2020, we had the right environment to get, you know, a new law passed, and we had certain mechanisms in there to make things better for other folks, and it got done in 2020. But yeah, I definitely played some, you know, helped a little bit is the best way I'll put it.
You're listening to Mo Asnani, owner of both the Downtown Dispensary and D2 Dispensary, and I am your host, Grant Kruger, here on Jump in Tucson. Yesterday, you had the awesome opportunity to listen to Ted Maxwell and his engagement hour over here. And every week, we're trying to bring you updated local content. Tomorrow, I've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance to talk about all the local attractions. You've got Ed Ackerley on Fridays. But today, we are live talking all things legalized cannabis in Tucson. Mo, can you explain the difference between a dispensary and, say, a smoke shop? There seems to be a tremendous amount of smoke shops popping up in Tucson. Every abandoned store seems to turn into a smoke shop. In some cases, there's one right next to another one. It's like the Mattress Firm of 2024. I can't figure this out.
Your timing couldn't be better on that question. So today, I believe, is the 12th. And yes, or sorry, the 13th. But I think it was yesterday that, or day before, that the attorney general came out with a ruling saying that smoke shops could not sell Delta 8 and, you know, other psychoactive cannabinoids, which is what we do. We're in the Delta 9 THC business. For the listeners who don't know, what you're buying when you go to a legal cannabis store, a licensed cannabis store, is you're buying some amount of Delta 9 THC, be it in, you know, flower format or vapes, edibles, topicals, what have you. And when you go to a smoke shop, hemp is being converted in, or hemp cannabinoids are being converted into psychoactive cannabinoids through a chemical process. And, you know, I don't know about the safety or the efficacy of that. And it's not something that's licensed. I don't believe it's regulated at all. And we have testing requirements. We have requirements that, you know, go all the way to the source, seed to sale at this point, in terms of saying where this raw material originated from that's in your product. So the amount of regulation that my industry has, the legal cannabis industry, is tremendous. But the smoke shops, you know, have kind of found a federal loophole and are starting to participate in this environment. And I don't think that's going to be sustainable long term.
Understood. So to the uneducated listener like myself over here, Delta 9 is essentially THC, tetrahydrocannabinol.
Yes. Delta 9 and THC are basically the same thing. So, okay. Yeah. So when you hear this Delta 8 and all of that, you know, it's not what we're in the core business of. We're in the Delta 9 THC business, just like, you know, liquor, alcohol, right? There's always an alcohol percentage, and it's the same thing. THC, it's a milligram or some percentage. But when you have smoke shops selling that without the 16% excise tax that we collect, you know, which goes into the state coffers and contributes to a lot of things, We really end up collecting about 24.7%, a little under 25%, between state and excise tax. So that contributes to a lot, and this is a loophole to not pay that. And I don't think that's good for anybody.
So you're paying over or nearly 25% in taxes on the product right now that goes out your doors?
Well, the consumers are paying it. Yeah. If you come in and buy a $20 product, right, you're going to be paying another 24.7% in sales and excise taxes on top of that.
Wow, fascinating. And Delta 8 then, just to finish this discussion over here, is like some sort of synthesized change Delta 9? Or is it something that they converted to be a product that has some drug-like effect that they're now selling legally because the technology has moved faster than the law?
The technology has moved faster than the law. There is a chemical conversion process going on, and I'm not sure it's legal.
Ah, fun times. Well, there you go. I guess that might explain the proliferation of smoke shops that we've seen around town over here, is that they're selling a little bit more than water pipes and rolling papers and things that I had allegedly heard of in my youth. So certainly a fascinating discussion over here with Mo, the owner of the Downtown and D2 Dispensaries over here. We've got about 30 seconds here before break, but when we come back, we're going to ask some more more hard-hitting questions about local politics and how Mo's gotten involved with these things. I've always said that when you're in the restaurant business, you're in the politics business, whether you like it or not, because we're so heavily regulated. But I can't even imagine the regulation that Mo's got going on over here with these particular businesses. And when we come back after the break, we're going to ask a few of those questions of Mo over here. You listening to Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. You are listening to Jump in Tucson with your host, Grant Kruger. We are live with Mo Asnani, owner of both the Downtown and D2 Dispensary, and we've been asking him a lot of hard-hitting questions about legal cannabis and THC, Delta 9, what can be done and what can't, and what's going on here in the city of Tucson. Mo is both an operator located downtown, has felt some of the effects of what our local politics have done to our downtown area. And just last week, I read sort of a scathing op-ed in the Arizona Daily Star that happened to be authored by Mo about current Pima County attorney Laura Conover. Can you tell me a little bit about that piece there, Mo?
Yeah. So, you know, when I wrote that, this had been building up for some time. I don't get that involved publicly, right? I didn't want to write about anybody without thinking it through and really having a reason to do it. And I think when I saw the performance from this county attorney, I didn't even know what the county attorney did, by the way, a few years ago, right? I learned this as I needed to, like most of us in business have to learn about politics as we need to. And what I saw was a pattern of people who are going through some very tough things, you know, be it any kind of assault, be it different crimes on businesses, be it, you know, employees not feeling safe when they're walking to their cars. And it not just being my business, but even others, you know, in that area, all feeling the same way to some degree. And at that point, I was like, how do you define competence in a county attorney's office? How do you define, you know, what performance really looks like? And if you have 30% of your prosecutors leaving, if you have sexual assaults up, you have burglaries up, and you know, people are like, oh, the data's changed. It's like, no, they changed the database, and like, I think we're reporting only 60 or 70%, you know. So during the pandemic, apparently, this is just some wonky stuff I'll share, but some of the databases that the crime gets reported to gets changed. Why does a business owner know this? Again, that's why we're talking about the county attorney race, is because we're having to do things in the business community that we're not being able to stay in our lanes. We're having to look at the issues that are affecting our customers, our communities. And really, you know, when we think about the safety of our employees, to me, that is the most important thing. I think it is for anybody who's responsible, you know, for having somebody come and spend a decent amount of their time every day at your place of work. So to me, Laura Conover's work performance has not lived up to the expectations. That's all this is. And when you look at any office holistically, you should simply say, is there a better person to do the job? And in this case, there is Mike Jetty, who's running for county attorney. And, you know, he's an experienced prosecutor, just came back from Pakistan working for the United States Department of Justice. He's got, 16 plus years of experience. So for me, I look at that and I'm like, okay, I don't just want to, you know, whine about a problem unless there's a potential solution. If nobody wanted to be county attorney, then Laura is probably your best option. But if you do have a competent person running against her, then this should be about performance, not about, you know, what political mascot do you, you know, worship greater than another. And I think that's where we have gone, and it's not working. So
give me some specific events that maybe drove you to get involved like this politically, because it could be really dangerous for a business owner to plant your flag in one camp or another, because you could really alienate some of your core customers.
And that's the thing, right? A county attorney race, I don't think many people know. I've asked randomly, like, do you know who our county attorney is? And they just give me a blank stare. I think it's right above, you know, state mine inspector for many on the ballot.
Don't say that about Paul Marsh there. I think he got more votes than any candidate in the history of the state of Arizona, quite frankly. Yeah. Unopposed running there, but...
Exactly, right? So no, I don't think that this is an office that should be polarizing. because just to be candid, I think there's many other elected officials who have displeasures with the current county attorney, won't publicly say it because of, you know, political ethic, whatever I'd call quantitative ethics when it comes to politics, but they don't want to say anything bad about certain people because of the repercussions that they could face. But a specific example is, I want to say it was April of maybe 2022 when this happened, or it might have been, I don't know, it was a long time ago. But basically, there was a customer who was having an incident and came back and did about 30 grand worth of damage with some very well-aimed bricks, hitting my rolling shutter motor, taking out a bunch of glass, you know, and doing a lot of damage and really threatening the lives of our customers and our employees. And when that incident happened, I felt so strongly that, you know, this person should not be out and about. And the cops were totally demoralized, right? They came and they picked him up. He was got arrested pretty quickly, but they're like, oh yeah, he'll be out in a couple of days. And I was like, hold on a second. What? How is that possible? He's threatened the lives of my customers, of my employees. How is he going to be out in a couple of days, you know? And they're like, oh yeah, you know, this ask the county attorney. I mean, I don't want to throw the cops under the bus. Like, they were doing their jobs. But if I was a cop and I'm arresting somebody for doing, you know, a significant amount of damage and threatening life, and I know this person's going to be out, I mean, who'd want to be, you know, being in the police force at that point? So I really think about it as, you know, fabric of society stuff at that point, because you're like, okay, if we don't have competent law enforcement who feels supported, you know, by other elected officials, then what's the point, you know? So that kind of drove that, because you have to zoom in and zoom out of these situations and look at the bigger picture. I know you're a community leader and, you know, I've gotten more involved now, but I think the more businesses start to do that and say, let's not just look at our internals, but the external things that affect us. Because if you're having to pay an armed security guard, you know, X amount of dollars a month, that's eating into a lot of things.
That's the crime tax, and we've talked about that on this show before too, that the inactivity of certain elected officials is actually a tax on the private sector, and that affects everything from our ability to pay our employees more to keeping prices low as well too. And I think we're all suffering that in Tucson. I know that I'm happen to be underneath you on the Coalition Against Retail Theft, a Metro Chamber group that's looking to reduce, you know, organized retail theft here in Tucson as well. Can you talk about that for a couple of minutes?
Yeah. So after this this incident happened, it motivated me to be a little more involved in the Tucson Metro Chamber that I'm a member of. And, you know, with this group that got reactivated called Coalition Against Retail Theft or CART, we run these monthly meetings. And then I get these other business owners and, you know, just community members. I don't even know if I want to call a mortuary, you know, like a thriving business. It's somebody who's really it's a very somber time of your life, right? Where you're having to go to a place like that. And I hear about elderly people being assaulted while visiting gravestones of their loved ones, about urns getting broken into, you know, and because there's encampments in the wash nearby. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, how, you know, this is, again, fabric of society stuff, how the way we're treating the dead and, you know, the folks who are visiting them. What does that tell you about the direction we're headed in? And I think when we all look at that, you're not just being a business owner means nothing if you're not going to be involved in everything else, you know, to some degree. And if we don't, if we say, I'm going to just stay in my lane, I'm not going to get involved, then we're going to have more of this. And I think we all know the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. The business community has to get more involved in local politics.
Well spoken, Mo. I couldn't agree with you more. But like I said, it's a difficult, you know, line to walk down there as well too, because we're going into a 2024 election that might be one of the most contentious elections that we've had in a long time, and everybody gets super charged about the presidential race or the Senate race. But what really is going to matter here for us in Pima County, right, in Tucson, is local politics. It's going to be races such as the county attorney, races such as sheriff, board of supervisor seats. These are the things that are going to make the difference in all of our daily lives. And yet, if you ask most people on the street, they wouldn't even know who these individuals are.
And I think maybe I should zoom out again for a second, right? Think of it like this. So I'm an immigrant. I came from India, where the dream was, you know, like, hey, America is this shining city on the hill. That was always, and then you come here, it's a bit of a melting pot, was the theory, right, of coming here. And now when you look around you, the polarization and the divide between I'm this party and I'm that party, you have to remember the reason I appreciate a guy like Mike Jetty running for county attorney is because he was in Pakistan, where the only mascot they care about is, hey, this guy's an American. They don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. And if you're in that mindset and then you come back here and just say, I want to do the best job possible, you haven't been contaminated with all the rhetoric that has been going on, regardless of what side you're on. I mean, these are both Democrats who are running. It's not like it's one party versus another. And I want independents to be engaged in this because they can all vote in the primary. And I think that's why just having the perspective of you're getting a guy who has not been a part of this political infighting that's been going on in our communities and our country, you know, for the last couple of years.
No, a great conversation. This is an absolutely intoxicating talk over here with Mo Asnani, owner of the Downtown and D2 dispensaries here in Tucson. We're going to go to break here in just a second, but we come back, we're going to wrap it up with Mo. We're going to talk about what he's got coming up in the future over here for both Downtown and D2. I think there's a little hint on some upcoming new product launches and perhaps a little bit of rebranding as well, too. You're listening to Grant Kruger on Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. You're listening to Jump In Tucson. Your host here, Grant Kruger, Matt Neely, our producer, and we are live with special guest Mo Asnani from the Downtown Dispensary and D2 Dispensary. Mo, we've been talking about all the challenges that a local business owner has and how that kind of has thrust you a bit into the spotlight of local politics, more so than a lot of other businesses. But in our last segment here, I kind of want to talk about your business and the nuts and bolts of it. Can you give me a rundown of how this works? I'm guessing a lot of our listeners don't either. How does the production side of legal cannabis work at this point?
So, you know, everybody does it a little bit differently. But for us, what we do is we believe in indoor cultivation. The reason we believe in indoor cultivation is we are in a place that goes up to 117 degrees, maybe 120 degrees Fahrenheit. And the plants don't like it, you know, in a flower stage above 75 degrees Fahrenheit. So indoor cultivation, especially in a state like Arizona and anywhere in the Southwest, to me, that's a quality metric. So we've been doing that here at a warehouse, not actually far from here, since 2017. We had one of the largest cultivations in Tucson for some time. I know there's bigger ones now. But what we like to do is integrated manufacturing. So we have an agricultural side, we have an extraction and lab side that does, you know, production of the, let's just call it the different juices that go into your vape. But these are really clean compared to what you may see with, you know, the other industry of vapes. If I don't even want to name the other groups, but what we really do is we try to keep it as close to, you know, good manufacturing practices as possible in everything we're doing. And then we make edibles, everything all under one roof. And by the time it gets to our stores, it's really just, you know, it couldn't be more local. It couldn't be more vegan in some cases, or organic, depending on what product you're talking about in the edible space. And the level of cleanliness and sanitation that we go for throughout the facility, I mean, I think, you know, people come through there and they're like, this is incredible. How do you do this all in one place? And for me, it's like, well, we started off with taking over, you know, an old call center. So you go in there, there's carpets everywhere, cubicles, people had still left their photos of their kids and stuff like that. And we had to go in and remodel this old call center and turn it into what is today, I believe, a state-of-the-art facility. So all those products that we do make with iLava, Touch is one of the top-selling topicals in Arizona. And we worked with a clinical aromatherapist to come up with the essential oil blend for that, imported ourselves from, you know, Corsica in France is where we get our helichrysum from. So really, I've gotten to take the scientific aspect of this and bring it to a different level here locally, just because I believe that we need to have the best quality products, you know, regardless of looking at what anybody else is doing, because this is a new industry. To give you an example, in medical, when we first opened, we had less than, you know, 50 products when we were selling them. And right when rec flipped, we probably had 250. And today we have over 1,000 products on our shelves, different SKUs that we make, ones we buy third party, you know, from wholesale and then just stock. but the amount of SKUs and brands that are out there, we saw that shift. We saw cannabis become a consumer packaged goods industry around 2018, 2019, and we leaned into that and we started to develop our own lines and brands. And I've talked to the LR marketing classes about that, and I've been happy to go back and, you know, talk to students just about your journey and how it's not necessarily templated in any way, and you kind of get to pick and choose the different paths, you know. And I never thought I would be in any capacity creating any new science. Well, I'm not doing it. I have a group of people who are really smart and working there with the right degrees to be doing it, but coordinating that, branding that, and creating an experience, you know, for the consumer where like, hey, this is really cool. Somebody puts some thought into it when they hold our new iLava Gold line of disposables. We just launched those. We're doing live resin disposables too, which are, you just take down plants when they're really about to be harvested, fresh freeze them into a negative 80 cryo chiller, and then extract the you know, sauce from them, if you will, and put that into vapes that are just really high quality. So again, the level of work that goes into making that little product is all done here in Tucson. And I think that's what's unique about us.
No, that's amazing, Mo. Hyperlocal, just under 200 employees right now and counting. Mo Asnani, the owner of the Downtown and D2 Dispensary. Before we close up today, why don't you give me some plugs? Give me the rundown about where your stores are located.
Our downtown location is on 6 and 6 at the corner. We have parking right next door there. And our east side location, which is our flagship, as a drive-through that's covered and is, as far as I know, the largest dispensary in Arizona, is on the intersection at 22nd and Cold.
Nice. So there's a drive-through for this now?
Oh yeah, we have an indoor drive-through with an exhaust system and everything.
Amazing. How about delivery? I heard that in January of 2025 that there could be legal cannabis delivery. Is that true? Am I accurate in that statement, sir?
There could be. I'm not sure exactly what that's going to look like, but it's still out there. We'll see what plays out there.
Is that like Uber Smokes as opposed to Uber Eats, or what are we looking at over here?
I think we believe in brick and mortar. I know that delivery has become a big thing, but we still think that, you know, having features like a drive-through are more conducive to the customer experience long term.
Do you've got any plans in the future to grow? Pun intended.
We're working on some other states. My business partner Chip has been in Ohio and New York, working on getting some of our brands out there and expansion in that direction. We might have some local news in a bit too, but we're working out some details as we speak.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've got a lot on your plate over here, Mo. I appreciate you taking the time to come join us this morning and educate myself and our listeners and Jump in Tucson on a little bit about the cannabis industry and both how that affects Tucson, like what we're seeing locally in terms of commercial development, what we're going to see in the future as well, too, and your step into local politics is also most appreciated, Mo. Not everybody has got that lower intestinal fortitude to go out there and say what's really affecting them. How does the crime tax affect me every single day in my business? And so I know you're taking a big risk, both in the business side of things and on the personal side of things, to sort of come out and say how you feel and how this is affecting you. And so for that, I also salute you as well too, sir. I appreciate you coming out today, and I appreciate everyone listening to Jump in Tucson. We've had a great hour over here talking about all things green moving forward, starting with both that golf tournament last year, St. Patrick's Day coming up. Beware the Ides of March in only 2 days. Stay safe out there, Tucson, because there will be a few DUI checkpoints looking for those that over-celebrate this weekend on St. Patrick's Day. But also do join us in St. Phillips Plaza as well, too. Enjoy Selection Sunday. It's been a great hour with you. You've been listening to Grant Kruger on Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk.